on weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to the two Johnnies for the afternoon entertainment. It is Wednesday, May 8th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, Paul Curry is in studio to review a night of exhilarating Champions League drama and look forward to what hopefully will be another sensational semi-final. Nadine Doherty previews both the Leinster and Connacht Ladies Football Provincial Finals. Damien Lawler wraps up the latest Gaelic Games news stories and we'll hear from GA President Jarla Burns. As always, if you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or we're on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening. Welcome along to the show. Paul Curry and Nadine Doherty are already with us. Nadine, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
Good. Looking forward to a big weekend of provincial action?
Yes, a lot on. The Connacht one kind of sneaked up there, Shane. I'd kind of forgotten about it with the two senior teams. So really looking forward to that. Looking forward to seeing Galway again. I'd say they're rejuvenised. And yeah, Mayo, just to see what they're about. And then Dublin Meath, it's kind of been the old familiar Leinster final for the last couple of years. Big one at Croke Park, which is super.
11:45 a.m. We will be getting into this in detail later in the show. But yeah.
Listen, I mean, you have the early games. If it's a minor game, if it's an under 21 game, Shane, you know, you're always going to have the early games now in Croke Park. You'd love to see the crowd get in early. You know, Meath have brought a brilliant crowd to Croke Park the last couple of years when they've been there. You'd love to see that continue. And yeah, you'd love to see the Dublin fans. You know, you'd hope as many of them as possible go in there early, because they get as good a football with the women as they will with the men.
Absolutely. The men's throws in at 1:45, hence the early throw in for the ladies provincial final. Paul Curry in football news. We are going to get stuck into Champions League shortly, but League of Ireland news. Stephen O'Donnell has made a surprise return to the League of Ireland Premier Division as assistant manager to Alan Reynolds at Bohemians. O'Donnell parted company with Dundalk exactly a month ago after a winless start to the new season. The 38-year-old returns to Dalymount Park, where he won a league and cup double as a player in 2008. I mentioned surprise return. I've already editorialised it. Were you surprised by this news, Paul?
I think everybody was, Shane. I think you know, a number of people maybe would have seen Stevie going back to Pats if that was a potential route back into management for him when the Pats job became available yesterday. And I'm not sure many people probably saw him stepping back into the game as quickly as he has done post the, I guess, what happened down with Dundalk. But I think it makes sense. I was only chatting to somebody on the weekend about Stevie and maybe where they saw him going as his next step within football. And I think maybe for the moment it makes sense for him to step into a coaching role. You know,
why?
I just think it's been very topsy-turvy between, if you think about the drama of when they won the Cup at St. Pat's and then he left and exited for Dundalk and then things haven't really gone to plan. I just feel like there's been a lot of turbulence in that last kind of two and a half year block that maybe it makes sense for him to take a step out of, because he went into management very quickly. And maybe it makes sense now for him to take a step back, get back to coaching, get back to maybe analysing from more of a spectator mode and being less hands-on with regards to making decisions before he then makes another move. Because I've no doubt he'll end up back in management, Shane. Absolutely no doubt about that. He's a brilliant football brain and he's obviously done good work, particularly his time at Pats. But I think for him it probably makes a lot of sense. Where people might be surprised is, you know, if you're Alan Reynolds right now, and I'm sure a number of people will be thinking, do you want somebody as your number two who potentially eyes himself as a manager going forward? And if maybe things don't work out for Alan Reynolds over the next 12, 18 months, would Stevie be a natural successor? Yes, potentially he would. So there's obviously a lot of trust between the two. I know Stevie would have played for Pat during his time at Bowes, Pat Fennin, that being who's very heavily involved from a director of football perspective. So it's a great, I think it's a superb addition for Bowes. But I think the timing of it was maybe a little surprising for a lot of people, but great to have a character like that back in the game. His playing career was obviously so successful, particularly at Dundalk, and he has a lot to give football in this country, and I think we need people like that close to our game. So it could be a really good recipe between himself and Adam Reynolds.
You mentioned he moved into management very quickly. That's a very interesting point, actually, probably something that admittedly I didn't really think about. Did he go into it too quickly?
I don't think so. Like,
well, he was successful with Pats.
Yeah, he was, and I think if you speak to any players who were down at Dundalk at that period of time, a lot of people would have said that he ran the dressing room, you know, being a senior pro. And if you watched Dundalk during that period of time, how they played, he dictated absolutely everything. Everything went through him. He moved bodies around them. You know, he had them set up from front to back, in and out of possession. And he obviously showed signs of having a very good understanding of the game while he was at Dundalk. And, you know, Stevie's knees wouldn't have been brilliant during his career, and he probably had to finish maybe a little earlier than others, and obviously saw a path into management. And when that opportunity came up at St. Pat's, he probably felt like it was a brilliant opportunity. And I think it's very hard to argue that he didn't do a really good job there.
Mm.
The decision to leave Pat's, I'm sure, is one in hindsight that he looks at and thinks that probably wasn't the wisest of moves, because what he had done at St. Pat's seemed like a perfect sort of stepping stone to bring them on to better things and challenge for leagues against Shamrock Rovers, and to be that kind of team that were going to push Shamrock Rovers on all fronts. And leaving that was probably not a great decision when you reflect and see how sort of turbulent Dundalk have been. Like, they've been an absolute mess off the pitch, and I'm sure there's so much that he had to deal with there. But when he had such an affiliation to the club, maybe felt like it was a difficult decision to turn down. So I wouldn't say he stepped into management too soon. I think he's a natural when it comes to that. But it probably makes sense now to just take a little break from things and get back to coaching and thinking about the game. Because I have no doubt that when you're, you know, a coach or assistant manager, you think about the game in a completely different way to somebody who has to make and call the shots on a weekly basis. So it'll be an interesting one. I'm sure himself and Alan Reynolds will get on well, and I'm sure, you know, Bowles will benefit from it, but I'm sure you'll see in time. It might not be next year or the year after that, but Stevie O'Donnell will definitely be back in management at some time in the future.
I think that is the big one. Bowes will benefit, and it is good to see Stevie back involved in the League of Ireland. Speaking of St. Patrick's Athletic, we did speak in detail with Conan Byrne yesterday. The news, of course, that John Daly was sacked by the club as first team manager. It looks likely that Sean O'Connor, who was Daly's number two, is going to be in charge on Friday against Shamrock Rovers, much to the unrest of St. Pat's fans on Twitter, who weren't best pleased with the news of this. Are you surprised more that the number two is still there? I know it was a case of Daly when Clancy was there as well, that kind of natural succession, but that Sean O'Connor still taken interim charge, Henry, considering when you have the likes of, say, Alan Matthews, Gerald Bryan, Stephen Elliott, all involved with the club.
Yeah, listen, if a number two in the League of Ireland is asked to stay on, they're going to stay on. Like, we don't have the luxury of being paying out thousands and thousands of pounds or euros to take managerial or assistant manager roles. So, like, Sean O'Connor needs to protect his own job. So if he's asked to stay on, he's absolutely going to do that. And he's been at that club for a number of years, working in both the academy and with the first team. So I've absolutely nothing against Sean for taking over the mantle for the game. That isn't to say that he wasn't loyal to Jonathan Daly. It's just the circumstances and how they've played out. Is he going to be the man who's going to, you know,
steer the ship?
No, it's not going to be. And I don't think he'd want it either, to be honest with you, Shane. But he obviously knows the players well. He might have his own opinions on how he sees the team playing and setting up. And sometimes it just takes somebody to come in and shift things about. We saw the impact that Jonathan Daly had when he took over. It's nothing to say that, you know, Sean O'Connor won't be able to get a result or two. But if I'm correct in saying, I think they play Shamrock Rovers, followed by Shells, followed by Derry.
Shells on the Monday, yeah.
So they are difficult fixtures for Sean O'Connor, any manager, to head into. And getting points is going to be very difficult. But I'm sure the knowledge of working with those players will benefit him, and he'll set them up in such a way to try get the maximum out of that squad. But absolutely nothing against Sean for hanging around. And I would imagine that whoever gets the job, Sean will probably be somewhere in the background within that team.
Yeah, so Rovers on Friday, Derry at home the following Friday. Rovers, of course, is in Talla. And then Pat's welcome Shells to Inchicore on the Monday.
I'd say anybody who's interviewing for the job is probably thinking, yeah, I take it after that one.
Sorry, and then four days later they play Bowes. So you've three Dublin derbies, and welcoming Derry City, who are hitting a bit of run of form, may have won on Friday if not for a late Sean Boyd equaliser.
And then European football just around the corner. So, like, this is a really important appointment for Pats. And you can kind of say that about a number of teams within the league. You get a feeling that the next sort of four, five, six games will determine whether teams are going to be looking up the table or whether they're going to be looking down the table. And Pats fit that mould. You'd say the same about kind of like Waterford, Bowes, Galway. See how these results get on over the next couple of weeks, and you pick up a bit of momentum in this league, and you can quickly climb the ladder. And
I think I was crunching the number. Sorry to cut across you, apologies. With Conan yesterday, I think they're 9 points off top and 4 points away from a relegation playoff.
I know it's a big if, but if Pats had beaten Sligo the other night, they would have been on 21 points, which would only have been three behind Derry.
Yeah.
Like, would you say Roy Higgins' job is under threat?
No.
We're sacking managers so quickly, and I know this is over in the UK, but Liam Rossini losing his job at Hull City, and he's up for a Championship Manager of the Year. Like, it's becoming bonkers stuff. And I
by a couple of points away from the playoffs.
Insane. And to be honest with you, I thought the Pats won. I know some of the performances results haven't been great, but I thought Jonathan Daly had credit in the bank, given the fact that he went on and won the cup last year and did good things with that squad. But
that perhaps you might be able to press the reset
season,
button in the
League
summer.
Ireland is an interesting season this year.
On the whole, manager Liam Rossini, I believe Ajun Ilijai, former Shelburne majority stakeholder, was on Sky Sports News and said there was a conflict of interest between board and management. So
he seems to draw conflict of interests where he goes.
Reportedly. We are going to be chatting Champions League. Stay with us. Champions League is coming up in 30 seconds time.
Game on.
Football.
Now, as promised, Paul Corrie, we are going to chat Champions League. Paris Saint-Germain exited the Champions League at the semi-final stage as a Mats Hummels goal earned Borussia Dortmund a 1-0 win at the Parc des Princes to send them through 2-0 on aggregate. Cracking contest. Only one goal scored. PSG, I think it was said in commentary, they could be playing until the Champions League final and they still wouldn't have scored. Woodwork four times, chances of plenty, but just wasn't happening. Wasn't their night.
No, and it wasn't to be their semi-final. But if you think back to the game in Dortmund, the first leg, they hit the inside of the post twice within the space of like 30 seconds, and I don't know how the ball didn't go into the back of the net. And then same again last night, Zaire Emery has to score, hits one against the post. Mendes hit the post, and then Vitinha hit the crossbar, and it just had that
cracking efforts.
Oh, they were brilliant efforts as well. And to be honest with you, I thought they absolutely pummeled Dortmund for the majority of that second half, and they just couldn't find a way of breaking them down. And sometimes when it's not your night, it has that feel that it's not going to be your night. In the Champions League, opportunities don't come around too often within games, and you sometimes feel when those opportunities do come around, you have to take them at clutch moments. And Zaire Emery, while it was nil all, missed an absolute sitter at the back post, and it was probably about 2 or 3 minutes later Mats Hummels heads in from a corner, which was really basic sort of defending. I mean, his movement wasn't brilliant. He's literally just pulled off to the back post, and Beraldo lost him. And if there's one criticism, and there's a couple of criticisms of Donnarumma, but one of them being he doesn't come for high balls. He's super glued to the line. Hummels knocked that in from about 5 or 6 yards, and if you think of the size of Donnarumma, surely got to be coming out and commanding his area. But yeah, it wasn't meant to be with Paris Saint-Germain, and we've seen that a couple of times, Shane, in the Champions League, that during those clutch moments they do tend to go missing. And I think what was so disappointing is their two sort of marksmen of Dembele and Mbappe were very quiet last night. They didn't really get going. That is a credit to Dortmund, how they set up and how they defended, but they just weren't able to get out of second gear, and they weren't able to create chances. And you know, for all the possession they had and for some of the opportunities that they created, they just weren't good enough in that final third, and that's come back to kill them. But for the purists who love the game, a bit like yourself, Dortmund being in the final is probably the result you wanted, was it?
Oh, absolutely. Speaking of Dortmund, like, no world class stars as such, but a team of just absolute relentless workers and littered with talent and skill, but the abundance of determination. You mentioned like Paris, where they were all over them and they were just attacking. It was countless attacks, but just the work rate and how they set up as well. For a team fifth in the Bundesliga, it was just phenomenal.
Yeah, and I was listening to their manager saying that, you know, it's not been the level of performance that they haven't reached in the Bundesliga. It's just the level of consistency that they haven't done it often enough. And I thought, looking at them last night, they were so well drilled. Terzic has, particularly the two centre halves, I thought Schlotterbeck was absolutely brilliant. I haven't seen a huge amount of him previously. Beautiful left foot. His distribution from the back is superb. And that, alongside Mats Hummels, who has all of the experience in the world. I mean, the first leg in particular looked like he was playing with a cigar in his mouth, just how cool and composed he was. His positioning was superb, and you could see that there was a great understanding between the two of them. Ryerson did a job on Mbappe, and Mattson, who's on loan from Chelsea, who played at Burnley last year,
I think he nearly got the permanent deal. He turned down the permanent deal and took a punt. Well, I say taking a punt with going to Dortmund, and now you could be
playing the Champions League final.
Yeah,
it's absolutely incredible. And you're right in saying that there's no superstars for that team. I mean, Sabitzer hardly lit up while he was in the Premier League. Emre Can, you know, obviously had a good
Jaden
career. Jaden Sancho, Julian Brand, Fulkrug. There's a real honesty about them, and they are extremely well set up. And particularly when they didn't have the ball last night, the speed at which they retreated back into their two banks of four was impressive, and the way they shut out and closed off gaps against Paris Saint-Germain was superb. And if you keep clean sheets at this stage of the tournament, you're always going to have an opportunity. And to be fair to them, when that opportunity did come around, Hummels took it. And once they went 2-0 ahead, I think they were happy enough to kind of sit in that kind of two banks of four. Sula came on, they went to five at the back. And the more Paris Saint-Germain got frustrated, the less likely it looked like Dortmund were going to be overturned. And for whoever gets into the final, I'm sure there'll be heavy favourites against Dortmund, whether that be Munich or whether it be Real Madrid. But it's an incredible story. To come from they were in that group of death with Paris Saint-Germain, Newcastle, AC Milan.
Yeah.
After two games, Didier Hamann was saying they had 1 point. And at that point, I'm sure a lot of the Dortmund fans would be saying, listen, if we could take Europa League football, we probably would at this point. Then to come out of that group, through the rounds, Atletico Madrid and Simeone, a very difficult team to play, then playing Paris Saint-Germain, can't say they haven't earned it. And for German football, like, Leverkusen are going strong, potentially Bayern Munich in a final. Like, we're very quick to look at Spain,
yeah,
and you know, the Premier League and Italy. German football is very, very strong at the moment,
and it is good to see. I do want to pick your brain on Kylian Mbappe. However, we have team news in from Real Madrid. Real Madrid always gift us with nice early team news here in Game On ahead of this evening's match. So Lunin in goal, Carvajal is back right full, Rudiger and Nacho centre halves, Ferland Mendy on the left, Valverde and Tchouameni in central midfield alongside Toni Kroos. Jude Bellingham may play as that false nine with Rodrigo and Vinicius Jr. On either wing, you would suspect. So, listen, we will preview Madrid and Munich, but just on Kylian Mbappe, I saw an article in The Guardian today, I think it was Barney Rene. The final act of Mbappe's final European game in Paris, and by extension, the last significant note of 6 years as the Sun King of the Qatari Sport Project. A 2-0 aggregate defeat by the fifth best team in Germany has its own kind of poetry. And it is, like, when you look back, and yes, he's established a brand, they've made millions off him. From a footballing point of view, the Champions League, he didn't get over the line. Will he be looking back, or is it too much of a statement to say, is it a waste of time spending 7 years in my wonderful prime here in Paris?
I don't think so. Like, I think he obviously wanted to play for Paris Saint-Germain for a period of time. Maybe not exiting earlier might have been something that you reflect on and maybe questions that decision to stay on. But I think I find it very hard. I know people can be critical of Mbappe, but I find it very hard to be too critical of him. I think he's absolute gold dust. I mean, anybody who scores a hat-trick in a World Cup final off the back of winning a World Cup 4 years before that, he's still only 25, he's done so much in the game. I think he's absolute gold dust, and he's brilliant to watch, and he's electric. And if you look at the team that he's playing within at the moment, you know, Paris Saint-Germain probably aren't, you know, one of the top five teams within European football, and maybe they are punching above their weight to get to a semi-final.
But when you have someone like credentials of Mbappe,
I think what will probably, you know, the PSG hierarchy will question is, they've gone down the whole Galacticos route with Neymar and Messi, and that didn't work. And then they've ripped it up, and you know, they've gone for probably a more honest approach with the team that they have under Luis Enrique, and they've probably changed their style a little more, and it still hasn't worked. I just wonder what recipe they might be able to find to go on and win a Champions League. Like, French football, Shane, isn't too competitive. You know, you expect Paris Saint-Germain to win the league title like Bayern Munich do in Germany, and maybe they don't get tested enough domestically that they can turn it up to another gear when they play some of the better teams in European football. They obviously got to the final against Bayern Munich in that COVID year and weren't able to capitalise, and again they've fallen short in a tie. I know they played well at certain times, but you would have expected Paris Saint-Germain to go through against Dortmund, and I'm sure a lot of people would have expected that they would have been in the final alongside probably Real Madrid. It just seems when there's those clutch moments, they can't get the job done, and that will be a frustration of the club, but particularly of Mbappe, because I'm sure he has so much loyalty there. He could have exited Paris Saint-Germain 12, 24 months ago and gone over to Spain. But yeah,
would you encourage him to go to Real Madrid? Because Marcel Desailly was speaking on beIN Sport and said, go off to Saudi Arabia, 350 million year contract, back for a World Cup year, then that's what Kylian should do.
So that's, oh, he's gone to Real Madrid, isn't he?
Yeah,
I mean, it'd be very surprising if he didn't. And Madrid seemed to have a perfect setup for him to go into that kind of front three alongside Rodrigo and Vinicius Junior, and then Bellingham drop a little deeper. And they've got a superb squad there that will definitely go on challenge for Champions League. And that's probably something that he has at the forefront of his mind, as he needs to win a Champions League now. He's won the World Cup with France. They'll probably be competitive again in the European Championships, and he's playing in an incredible international team. And maybe if he surrounds himself a bit more quality at club level with the players that we've just mentioned, you know, it'd be a silly man to bet against Real Madrid going on and win more European titles.
I'm looking at that Real Madrid starting 11 there on my screen, and just, if you throw Mbappe into it, it's just...
Yeah, and don't forget, like, Courtois on the bench there. Militao is only coming back from a period of being out injured.
Arda Güler is only going to get better. Goulart, these young lads coming through. The
young Brazilian boy, what's his name? Oh, I have to get that.
We've a minute to think about it, because we're going to hear from Carlo Ancelotti, who was speaking ahead of Real Madrid versus Bayern Munich this evening.
Bayern is a good team, really good, fantastic in transition. They have a striker really with quality, really dangerous, and we could play better. We try to play better.
What makes this group of players, your team, so special? Is it their ability to make the big moments count?
A good connection between the ability, the experience, history, tradition of the club is a good connection. Only for this you can explain what happened and what we hope is going to happen in the future. I think we have a young squad, and the future, we think that the future will be really good for us.
And what about for you, one game away from Wembley? You have won the Champions League many times before. Do you still have the same motivation and joy in this competition?
Yeah, I think that the final of the Champions League is the best game that where you want to be. I would like to be another time in a final and to be there.
The best game where you want to be. I must give you credit, Paul Carr. Just as I played that clip, you said Endrick was, of course. You said, I was giving you credit. You're too honest. That's your problem, Paul. That's your problem.
Well, he's already agreed to join in July 2024. And he is an absolute superstar coming forward, so...
On the match then itself this evening, as Carlo Ancelotti mentioned there, that it is the match you want to be playing in. It is the place where you want to be. Will Real Madrid progress and defeat Bayern Munich this evening?
You would expect so, Shane. And
in a similar vein, you'd expect PSG to beat Dortmund.
Exactly. I think what's important here is that the tie is level, and I think Real Madrid, whenever they're at home, will fancy themselves against most teams in Europe. And I think Carvajal coming back in at right back is a big addition. He was suspended for the first leg, and a lot of the Bayern Munich play in that game came through Musiala and Kane drifting into those areas against Vasquez, who's not a natural right back, and that led to a couple of problems. He gave away the penalty, and I think Carvajal's experience coming into that position will just shore up their back four. And, you know, similar game plan for Real Madrid anytime they play is not to play with too much structure and try bring the likes of Rodrigo, Vinicius Jr. and Bellingham into the game and just give them the freedom to go and express themselves. And a lot of the time when they do that, it's too much for teams to deal with. And particularly when you look at that Bayern Munich back four, if it is to be Dier and Kim again as the two centre halves, that will give you a hell of a lot of worry, because Kim was all over the shot.
Matthias de Ligt.
Is de Ligt back in?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah.
That, now, we have Real Madrid team news confirmed, unlike Bayern
Munich. I mean,
Bayern
if de Ligt is fit, he didn't play on the weekend again against Stuttgart, but if he is fit, he'll definitely come in for Kim. But even de Ligt, like, he's physical, he's big, but I can't imagine he's going to be great at dealing with players with low centre of gravity. And that's exactly what Vinicius and Rodrigo have in abundance. And I think when they get that right going forward tonight, I think they'll cause Bayern Munich a hell of a lot of problems. But it won't be a battering. This will be a very tight affair. I said that last week when we previewed the game. I thought Real Madrid would just about sneak it over the two legs, and I would still back that opinion again, because Bayern Munich have a lot of know-how. They've obviously got a lot of threat in the final end of the pitch, that if a chance does come about, they are definitely good enough to take it. But it's very hard, Shane, I think, to drift away from Real Madrid. The history in the competition, Ancelotti and his record, the number of European titles they've won in the last number of years, and just the amount of quality they have through the squad, I think they've got too much. And I would actually back that Real Madrid will go on and win this tournament. I don't think Dortmund would be able to stop them.
Dortmund have already had their that big performance. Although, listen, it's a cup final, cliches, etc. Thomas Tuchel did say earlier today, Kim Min-jae and Dayo Upamecano don't come off well for me at the moment. Matthias and Eric are ahead. Matthias has been given the green light, so we will play. Now, listen, managers do say things and it could be mind games, but if it is a case of the lick back, that is huge, because
he hasn't played a huge amount of football.
No, so he missed the last two games, suffered a knee injury in the match against Eintracht Frankfurt, and subsequently missed, of course, that first leg, as I mentioned, and last week's game against Stuttgart. Would that be a fair, coming in a bit cold?
Oh, I think so. Like
against Vinicius Junior, yeah, Rodrigo,
Champions League semi final. Madrid. That's not a game, particularly when you have that size and you have that bulk. Like playing against players who are so nippy like that, who just, you know, run in behind you, or they find pockets in front of you, and they're able to just accelerate so quickly. That is not something that De Ligt and Dyer would be, you know, their game wouldn't be designed. They'd much rather play up against, say, a Fulkrug who played centre forward for Dortmund last night, where it's a physical battle. But yeah, they need protection. They definitely need protection in front of them tonight, because Real Madrid have shown how good they are going forward. If you even think back to the first leg against Manchester City, they were electric going forward, and they've goals throughout the team, athleticism throughout the team, and they just find so many different ways of breaking you down. And I know last night was brilliant to see Paris Saint-Germain and Dortmund, but this is the game that all the eyeballs are on. This really
is it going to get. I'm always fearful then. It's the ones where you big up too much, and then it's like, oh, this is just going to be a real dogged 40.
I don't think Real Madrid, because I think Real Madrid will just fancy to go at Bayern Munich, and I think Bayern Munich will fancy that they've enough that they can cause some problems on the counter-attack. Maybe it's German football's year. Wasn't it 2013? Dortmund and Munich final. Could be a repeat of that. But
in Wembley.
I fancy Madrid. I fancy you.
Well, I've already nailed my colours to the mast earlier with the two Johnnies, and I called it a while ago that it would be an all-German final.
Oof.
So I'm halfway there with my Dortmund prediction.
Did you call that in the semi-final?
No, genuinely, yeah. Before ball was kicked.
I thought you were going to tell me you called this in like the round of 16.
No, sorry.
Like some amazing
prediction. Before both first legs.
There's only four teams left, Shane,
and the world at his mother is expected PSG to win. Kylian Mbappe, we've just talked about his credentials, and we've just then a Real Madrid team that's littered with talent, and young Endrick is going to be joining them soon.
Mystic Meg.
Right, Paul Carey, final word to you then, our football expert. Give me a score prediction for this evening.
I'll go 2-1 Real Madrid.
2-1.
I mean, you have to give us one now.
Yeah.
Go on. You have to give us a prediction.
I said Bayern in extra time.
Okay.
2-1. 2-1 Bayern. It'll be 1-1, and then Bayern will nick it late on in extra time. I hope, just to spare my blushes. Listen, Paul Carey, gentlemen, thanks so much for popping in. Hopefully it is a cracker of a match. We will be reviewing it tomorrow. Marie's back on the show tomorrow. We'll be reviewing that and plenty more besides. Stick with us, because we have a heap of Gaelic games to get through. Damien Lawler will be joining us. We'll hear from GA President Jarlath Burns. And Nadine Doherty is still with us, because there is a big weekend in ladies football provincial action. Stick with us here in Game On. GAA. Now, Damien Lawler is with us to chat Gaelic games. And Damien, let us begin our conversation with the Tailteann Cup, because the third season of the Tailteann Cup was launched at Croke Park yesterday. And you were there for the launch. There were representatives from the majority of teams ahead of this weekend there, and also the GA president who you were speaking to. How was the launch overall, Damien?
Yeah, no point in saying otherwise. It was a positive event, but there was definitely three or four faces that, like, you know, they were maybe bit disappointed to be at the launch, if you know what I mean, Shane. And I'm probably talking the down player, Pierce Laverty, probably talking about Darragh Kerwin from Kildare, maybe another player or so. You know, they would have had aspirations maybe to be in the Sam Maguire. Well, certainly Down would have had anyway after their season. They got beaten in last year's Tailteann Cup final. So I think it's a quick enough turnaround for them. I mean, they really want to win silverware, simple as that. For the likes of Kildare, well, they have to find a bit of form before they can think about that, even though they are paper, they're up there with the favourites. But a county like Sligo is quietly progressing the whole time under Tony McEntee, and watch out for them, Shane. But look, it was also a pleasure to be able to talk to the Waterford captain, Jason Curry, you know, who they're probably fresh from Their first championship win over Tipperary since 1988. They got beaten by Clare in the Munster semi-final, but you know, it's been a good year for them so far. They've had 11 players turned over from last year, and for them it's about maybe testing themselves. They're in Kildare's group as well, along with Leitrim and Longford. But then I had a word with Jarlath Burns, the GAA president, and you know, he was just talking about the fact that there was positivity about the place, that ultimately as disappointed as Down and Kildare were, they wanted to go up and lift the cup and bring it back home. And he kind of said that this was probably the most exciting competition of the 3 years that it's been in existence.
I think this year is probably the most open year we've had. I mean, people will look at Kildare, they will look at Down as favourites, but Down were beaten by Westmeath in the final Division 3 and well beaten. Kildare haven't distinguished themselves this year in the league or the championship. So I would imagine that there are a lot of fellas who are here today who believe that they could be coming back here to lift the Tailteann Cup. And it is a great competition for teams to make incremental gains through into the Samovar.
Just chatting to a few of the players, you can see they're a little bit maybe downbeat from recent results. But this is the glory of this competition, is it, Jarlath? That a couple of games, you start to get a feel for it, you get a chance to get back to Croke Park, play semi-finals and finals.
I suppose for the teams who are here today at the launch, from speaking to them, they will tell you that they've lost a bit of momentum, because play seven games in the league, some of them get on to the, maybe do well in the league, get on to the league final, and then you're beaten in the championship. There's 5 weeks, you go back to your clubs, and now they're very, very keen to get back on the wagon again and getting playing those three games in a row. And I think they're very excited at the prospect of going back to playing teams maybe that are commensurate with their own ability.
I suppose it is fairly remarkable that with such a glut of fixtures coming in the next few weeks, that, you know, with the season format, the Tailteann Cup smoothly fits in and actually finishes 3 or 4 weeks before the main championship. So would you take that on board, Jarlath? A lot of people talking about the season structure, but a competition like this can easily fit in too.
Yeah, well, look, the Tailteann Cup is there and was created because the counties wanted it. And you can see the amount of effort that they have put into it. Westmeath winning 2 years ago has really brought them on, winning Division 3 this year. And they really looked like a team that could do well again, Westmeath. Meath last year, I think, was the big lift for all of us because they took it very seriously. They really wanted to win it. We saw the celebrations when they did win it. So I would imagine that all of the teams who are in it this year will say, this is something that will guarantee us Sam Maguire for the following year. But bigger than that, it gets us to Croke Park, onto the steps of the Hogan Stand, on one of the biggest days in the calendar, and to take a cup home with us. And from talking to the players here, that's what they want.
So the Tailteann Cup starts this weekend with the round robin phase concluding on the June Bank Holiday weekend. The final will be held at Croke Park on Saturday, July 13th, as a curtain raiser to an All-Ireland Senior semi-final will be shown live on RT. Before that, the semi-finals will be held at Croke Park on June 23rd and will also be shown live on RT. The eventual champions will be guaranteed Sam Maguire football in 2025. Damien, talk to me about Kildare, because Kildare's Tailteann Cup opener against Longford will be played in front of just over 1,000 fans, 1,200 fans, after the county opted to host the fixture at their Centre of Excellence in Hawkfield.
6 years on from beating Mayo in front of 8,200 in the Newbridge or Nowhere game, Saturday's game against Longford, 1,200 supporters will be able to go there, Shane, but I'm not sure if they even will be that amount. It's mad that they only lost by 2 points to Dublin in last year's Leinster semi-final, but this has been a torrid season for them so far. Lost all their National League games. They beat Wicklow at the death in Leinster and then got beaten by Louth in that Leinster Championship. So they revert back to the Tailteann Cup. And as you say, Hawkfield is a centre of excellence. You know, the hurlers and the ladies footballers teams in Camogie play there as well. Underage, a lot of underage games there too. But yeah, it's definitely as off-Broadway as you can get, Shane. It may be the first step towards getting back to the mainstream, but they have a long journey ahead. Like, they're fairly bereft in confidence, and Dara Curran was saying to me that it is the first step to try and build a bit of momentum and restore a bit of pride for them. He was saying that they're still quite raw from the Louth game, but it's basically they've no choice but to get the mindset right for this game going forward. And like, Longford on a pitch like that won't be simple. So if your frame of mind is not right, you'll be in trouble, big trouble straight away. Now, the groups are, you know, you can finish second or maybe in some places third and get out of it to reach the next stage. But it is a fair change from Newbridge or Nowhere, Shane. There's no getting away from that. And it's a county bereft of confidence. And I suppose the Tailteann Cup could go a long way towards lifting it. I think they'll be one of those counties, if they got a sniff of Croke Park and a silverware, they'd have to rise to the occasion. But it is a long way back, though.
It most certainly is. Just to follow up on that, obviously St. Connaught's Park is undergoing redevelopment work, and Kildare have played home in inverted comma fixtures in Kilkenny, Tobor and Carlow. So why Hawkfield? Is it because of demand for tickets is low, or is it availability, or...?
I suppose, Shane, a lot of the grounds that they might have looked to play venues in, there are matches on elsewhere. Like, I mean, we have 16 counties out this weekend in Tailteann Cup, including maybe the likes of Carlow and Offaly, and maybe the grounds are being used elsewhere. But I think there won't be a huge drive for tickets on this one. And maybe the decision was made that with the number of supporters going, that Hawkfield would be the place to have it. And I guess... at the very least, you know, it's a recognised GAA ground for their development teams, and maybe it's where they train. So maybe, do you know, maybe there's something to be said for stripping it all back to brass tacks, back to basics, and working your way back up again. There might be something to it, but I suspect it's the fact that other venues could be in use. I suspect it's the fact that not a huge amount of supporters will look to go to this one, and maybe they just want to play the game in their own base and get going again. By the way, Shane, one quick point to mention about the Tailteann Cup. You know, from talking to county officials along the way, you know, the prospect of a third-tier competition has been mooted as well. It's been mooted. It's there at minor level now. And it could be up for discussion again in about, I suppose, when can you make a change again to the system? Two years' time, I think. Potentially you can start discussing it. But for counties like Waterford, maybe, and the lower-tier counties that might not have even realistic aspirations to lift the Tailteann Cup, that's just something that will probably come up into the consciousness again over the next year or two. So keep an eye out for that.
That could be a very interesting development. We mentioned there mightn't be that much demand for tickets at Hawkfield. One place where there certainly will be demand for tickets is the Park on Saturday night, Cork against Limerick. I can't let you go without mentioning this one. It's do or die for Cork. And you know what, Damien? I'm not basing this on anything. This is why I asked the questions and you answered them. But I have a funny feeling Cork might do something on Saturday night.
Yeah, I have the remnants of the same feeling, to be honest with you. Like, they conceded 3.26 to Clare and they conceded 2.25 to Waterford. So the first thing they're going to have to do is shut up shop. Now, that's fair hard to do against the best team in the land and maybe the best team that has ever been. You know, maybe a couple of counties might argue with that, but they're certainly in discussion for that. I think they have to watch out then to finish with 15 players. They had to play the last 20 minutes against Clare when their captain Sean O'Donoghue, you know, was sent off. But they showed positives, you know, and they put themselves in a great position to win the game last time out. And I think it was a much improved performance than it was against Waterford. And I think their backs are to the wall now, and they have the All-Ireland champions in town. It's a sellout, or it's going to be close to a sellout, and there will be a massive, massive crowd, and they need to win. You know, they can't afford one more mistake. When you've lost your first two games, you really are backs to the wall. And look, you saw last weekend there, Wexford Park, Wexford against Galway, their backs were to the wall as well, Shane. And you know, look, Limerick are only human too. They probably have one foot in a Munster final. There's no getting away from that. They certainly have one foot in the qualification out of Munster. So if they're any way off their game at all, Cork should be able to poke a few holes in their rear guard. But it's going to take an unmerciful Cork performance, like the best under Pat Ryan. And he's been lucky. Like he's been unlucky. They were unlucky last year as well. They haven't been losing games by much, but that's a tired old narrative to throw around in hurling too. Sympathy won't last too long if you're running on that fuel. So they need a massive performance. But they do have the forwards, they do have the pace. They need to up the work rate and they need to tighten up the defence. Simple as that. And they need lads to come off the bench absolutely hopping. But it could be a good day down there. And if they do win, the whole thing is thrown wide open again, Shane, and that's the glory of the Munster Hurling Championship.
Oh, that's exactly what you want. It's going to be a busy day of Gaelic games on Saturday. Saturday game is back. You're back Saturday night?
Yeah, 9:30, RTE2. Really looking forward to it. We're back with a bang as well. Like, there's under 20 semi-finals, there's Joe McDonough, there's Tailteann Cup, there's that game we're speaking about. So the next 2 weeks for the Saturday game particularly are top heavy with action, and that's what we want, you know, so... back with a bang, please, God.
Happy days. Listen, for now, Damien Lawler, RTE Sport, Gaelic Games journalist. Great chatting, as always.
Game on.
Ladies football.
Yeah, you're very welcome back to Game On. Nadine Doherty is here to chat ladies football. Nadine, where shall we begin? Let us begin with looking ahead at a repeat of last weekend's fixture between Dublin and Meath in the Leinster final. Dublin 5-13, Meath 8 points last weekend. But there is a load of narratives to say why that is not just going to be the case this weekend.
No, it's not going to be the case, but I'm not sure if it's going to be far off a chain, to be
honest. Really?
Yeah, I just think...
That one-sided...
I just think Dublin are miles ahead. I mean, they're miles ahead of everybody in Leinster. And, excuse me, granted, you know, Meath, they played, I suppose you could say, their second string team. You know, they changed the goalkeeper. There were a lot of different new faces in, as we say. But I just can't see it being a whole lot different in Croke Park. I just think Dublin are very much at home there now. Meath in general this year, you could say, you know, that there's a lot of new faces, even in what they would see as their starting 15. I don't know, I just think it could overwhelm them. I hope not. I hope we do have a closer game. But as I said, you know, Dublin, they're just flying. And you look at their four goal scorers there, like Nicole Owen's got two goals. That was probably her first almost full game. I think Sinead Goldrick scored two or three points. She absolutely dominated, especially in the first half. Lauren McGee was back in the team, you know, getting game time. And then you have loads of younger players. And Mick Bohan spoke after about the importance of the provincial championships for Dublin and other teams in getting players games. And Meath used the game for the same reason at the weekend. I think Dublin will do a job on Emma Duggan. I think they'll commit players on her, and I think that will be enough to nullify any real Meath attack, and that's been the difference, Shane.
Is that the concern for Meath in a broader picture of that just reliance now that Vicky Wall and that transitional period of...
Yeah, and even you could say the way they used to play football was that transitional football, and they had the players to enact that game plan, and I just don't think they have the pace or the strength at the minute. You know, they have a lot of really good young footballers, like young Smith there, Kira Smith, she's a classy footballer, but at the minute she just doesn't have that physical strength or pace and power. Like I can't see her, you know, running box to box in Croke Park in less than 60 seconds like other players used to be able to do. So, you know, they're missing that element. But yeah, I just think with Meath, when you look at their league performances, they were very solid. You know, they retained their Division 1 status, which was huge because that division was so competitive this year. But just scoring, Shane, they're just not scoring goals. They're not scoring enough goals. And in the past, they were able to nullify teams and keep down, you know, the goals conceded, and they're not doing that either. And I just think scores will be hard for them to come by on that big Croke Park pitch.
Against the Dublin attack, who's been averaging three or four goals a game.
Yeah, they've just been...
It's a scary prospect.
Yeah, they've just been so good, Shane. You know, like, I would have felt last year that that was probably Mick Bohan's greatest All-Ireland, considering they were a team in transition. A lot of those familiar names had moved on, they'd stepped away, and he was able to build this incredible squad that just went into overdrive in July and kicked on for the rest of the year. He has now managed to strengthen that squad even further, which is incredible. And I mean, I just think this year, young Grace Coss in the middle of the field, I think she's been absolutely fantastic, paired brilliantly with Jennifer Dunn. You know, we're talking about Lauren McGee there, who hasn't played a whole pile of football, would walk into any team in the country, and you're wondering, is Lauren going to start the Leinster final? Aoife Cain, another massive household name, brilliant to see her back in the other day, may not get a place. It's incredible, really. And I know people are probably saying, oh, she's bigging them up, and the season hasn't even kicked into gear yet, but I just think they're...
No, the talent is there, the players are there, and we've seen big results already.
Yeah, you really have, Shane, and I know they didn't make a league final, and you can't forget Kerry, Armagh, Galway, Mayo, etc., but especially with Sinead Goldrick coming back in, listen, they're going to be very, very hard beaten, and if somebody does, well, I'll take my hat off for fair play to them, you know.
Before we move on to the Connacht final, just broadly speaking, I know you mentioned the importance of the provincial championships in what it means to the teams to find players and what the managers can do with it. What does winning a provincial title mean? Because we always have this debate, are they redundant and everything in men's football? But like, to win a bit of silverware surely is a big achievement.
It's huge. Well, I mean, you look at the LGFA All-Ireland, so you've had Dublin, Meath and Cork. That's been it, I think, in the last 15 years-ish. Mm-hmm. So to win any trophy is incredible. I know us with Donegal, no more than, you know, the men's Ulster Championship, having a provincial medal is huge. You look at Donegal last year when they beat Armagh in that final. I mean, that how they celebrated, that was huge for Donegal. And if they're able to do the same against the odds this week or in 2 weeks, then that'll be massive again. Yeah, it's huge. And also, you know, as we were speaking off air, I think media wise and coverage wise, Shane, if we didn't have provincial championships, the little National League finished this year, I think the first or second week of April. So if we go from then until now with no ladies football in the media or in the spotlight in what's an already oversaturated summer of sport, then you're going to lose interest, you're going to lose fans. So I think they're massively important. And listen, I know Dublin have probably dominated Leinster, but Munster has been particularly impressive in terms of, you know, competitiveness and matches. At the weekend, both matches were won with points in the last minute. So listen, for me anyway, personally, I love to see them. I love to see them played. I just, my point is always, I'd love to see the senior championship expand in their number of teams. I know relegation serves a purpose and so on, but I'd love to just see Connacht build up and Ulster build up and not lose teams. But I suppose it's fine in the balance of when a team is in transition or a team comes up from intermediate, it's keeping those players together and developing that team further. But yeah, keep the provincials for me, for sure.
Speaking of Connacht, as you mentioned, there are only two teams. So Mayo play Galway in St. Bridget's Roscommon at 2 p.m. on Sunday. What are you expecting to see from this clash?
I don't have a clue.
Which is a good good way to be.
I mean, you look at Mayo, I suppose, in the league. They had a solid league campaign. I'd say their aim was to maintain their Division 1 status. You know, Liam McHale and his management team came in. A manager can give a new manager can give a team a huge boost. I think he did. I think he still retained a lot of the good work that Michael Moyles had put in over the previous 3 years. They were nice to watch at times, Mayo, I felt. Probably not consistent enough up front. They'll have the stat themselves, but I'd say their wides average was fairly high. I think if they can get that right, Mayo on any day are in with the chance of putting it up to any team. You know, Laura Brennan, very solid goalkeeper. She got goalkeeper in the team of the league. Excellent platform for Mayo. Lisa Caffergy was in amazing form up front. And you know, you look at their results against the top teams. They drew with Kerry. They beat Galway. Granted, Galway only won one other game, and Armagh, I think, was their best performance, Shane, and they only lost by a point, and they had chances to win that game. I mean, they had huge chances. I'd say that was one that they look at that they left behind, and their heaviest defeat was against Dublin by 7 points. They were completely outclassed that day. But look, I always like watching Mayo, and as I said, I think on any given day they can put it up to anybody. Galway, who knows? Listen, that's the thing with Galway. You know, we've become accustomed to, over the last few years since Kilkerran started, you know, dominating a club level, we've been accustomed to a Galway league team and a Galway championship team. So I suppose it's just the guess is how many Kilkerran players will start this weekend, or will the management team, I suppose, stay with the players that saw them through the league, granted they got relegated. And so my big question around that with Galway was, they had that opportunity, Shane, to get over the line against Waterford. They built up a good bit of momentum, they'd beaten Meath, they had a decent result the following week, and I was really surprised that they lost that game to Waterford. But look, they would have had 6 or 7 weeks of training behind closed doors, and I'd imagine they'll be well up for this game at the weekend. So yeah, listen, either way, I can't predict it.
That's a good place to be fair. So hopefully it's going to be evening match and plenty of entertainment. So Dublin Meath and Croke Park, 11:45 a.m. throw in Mayo Galway, 2 p.m. in St. Bridget's Roscommon at 2 p.m. then the following week, and we will be previewing that in due course next week. Munster final, Cork Kerry and Armagh Donegal in the Ulster final. Just briefly on Munster, Cork Kerry are in the final. Competitive last weekend. Cork just defeated Tipperary 11 points to 10. Sive McGoldrick was the hero for Cork as she got the winning point in the last minute. And Kerry again, a 1 point win over Waterford, 1-8-1-7. So you're talking about the expansion of the senior championship. It's good to see there's this competitiveness in the senior championship.
It's great, Shane, and it's great to see Cork being competitive in Munster. you know, we were a bit worried about, well, I was a bit worried about them following their league form. Tipperary would be very disappointed, Shane. I think that was a huge opportunity missed for them to make a Munster final. They dominated that game. I think they had over 15 wides. Yeah, and Katie Quirk, as per usual, knocked over the frees, got a couple of scores from play to see Cork over the line. So look, they'll be thrilled with that. And you forget, Cork are defending Munster champions. You know, they surprised everybody last year. And yeah, Kerry and Waterford. Waterford, again, probably left it behind. Kerry, no more than Dublin. They got a lot of game time into to young players, you know, young panellists. So they'll be happy enough with that. So yeah, an old Cork-Kerry Munster final in a few weeks.
Something to look forward to. Just before we do go, Nadine, first and foremost, thank you very much for popping in. We do have Bayern Munich team news. Neuer, De Ligt, Kimmich, Gnabry, Kane, Sané, Dier, Laimer, Mazraoui, Musiala and Pavlovic all start. We brought you the Real Madrid team news earlier. Big thanks to John Farrell and to Lorley Davis working on this evening's show. Beda de Silva is up next, so do stay tuned to 2FM. Marie is back tomorrow from 6. So from all of the Game On team, it is bye for now.